This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Authorities in Charlotte, North Carolina, have just released portions of video from dash cam and body cam footage of the fatal police killing of Keith Lamont Scott. Critics are demanding the police release all available footage. The videos that are released show Scott stepping backwards with his arms by his side when he is fired upon by police. Police apparently yelled, "Drop the gun," while Scott maintained he was unarmed. The video does not show the presence of a gun. Police have justified the shooting as legitimate. Scott's killing in Charlotte inspired a major public rebellion last week that lasted days and continues to an extent today. Police lifted a curfew on Sunday night. A protester named Justin Carr was killed last week, and while rumors swirled around police responsibility for his death, officers announced that another man in custody named Raquan Borum has confessed to Carr's killing. My guest is Rosa Clemente. She's a community organizer, active with Black Lives Matter, a freelance journalist, the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, and currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's also a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali, and she just returned from Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Rosa.
Thank you, Sonali.
So you got there, I understand, on Friday, and all of last week, or several days last week, there was very powerful protesting. And I understand you had the chance to speak with a number of residents of Charlotte as well. Can you give us a sense of the public anger, particularly in the Black community, over Keith Lamont Scott's killing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the anger goes beyond just his killing. Charlotte, in the last 14 months, there's been 6 murders of unarmed Black men in Charlotte. And Charlotte is a fast-growing city. It's not a gentrified city like we've seen in other major cities, Chicago or New York. It's a city that is experiencing like a tech boom, and in what is called Center City, and as well as a lot of banking. I mean, all the banks, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, major, and are headquartered there. So, you know, the gap, the income gap, the economic gap, housing, it has some good public schools in comparison to some other cities, you know, and it actually does have a Black middle class, but most Black folks there are definitely marginalized and almost kind of segregated in certain areas. So all of that, plus this the recent shooting, has led to, I guess, just a complete kind of divide in the community, even though the city of Charlotte looks like it's progressive and that there's a lot of opportunities. It doesn't exist for a lot of Black residents in Charlotte.
Well, the up until Saturday, the only video that we had publicly of what happened to Mr. Scott was his wife, Rekia Scott's video, where she is talking to him. I mean, it's just a horrific thing for a woman to be filming her husband getting shot. But then the police, as I mentioned, released this video today that I don't want to show on our screen because, you know, it's just really horrifying to have to sort of re-traumatize ourselves and desensitize ourselves to Black death. But people can watch it online if they want. And that video just shows Scott backing up, arms at his side, completely non-threatening when he is shot. How are the police justifying this, Rosa?
Well, I mean, they're not. I mean, they haven't really, the way they're justifying it is by releasing some of the video and not all of the video. There's a lot of, seems to be just a lot of things that they probably know that they don't want to release to the public that'll tell the true facts, you know? And I think the chief of police being African American himself, the mayor being some people have called a white progressive as a and a woman. You know, I think there's a lot of ways that, you know, people have to deal also with like what these power dynamics and this kind of representation of so-called minority groups and power means. But look, the people of Charlotte are clear. They don't trust the chief of police. They haven't trusted him. The mayor, they say, just speaks a lot of words. And a lot of people were feeling that Mr. Scott still didn't have a gun and that police do plant evidence. And we can't forget that that's what we saw about 14 months ago in the Walter Scott case in South Carolina, where the police planted a gun after they shot him. You know, and a lot of witnesses also say that he did have a book. And these are just things that don't get out into the mainstream narrative, or that even some people, you know, that support Black Lives Matter or any of these movements against police brutality don't want to think that the police can act like this and be in concert like this. But we know from the histories that this is always how the police have acted.
Right.
So they continue to justify it in that way.
And of course, we know that just having a gun shouldn't be a cause to even get killed. Had Mr. Scott, if it turns out that he had a gun, it still wouldn't have justified his killing, because police constantly find ways to disarm armed white men without killing them.
But also, look, North Carolina is an open carry state.
Right.
So when I was walking in the protests yesterday, there were a lot of white men that looked like white supremacists, part of hate groups, that were carrying guns, if, you know, open, right, you know, walking with them. Even at in the protests, you know, I have to say, I've never seen what happened with CNN and the kind of private security that they had with their reporters, and all of these securities, seven for one reporter, looked like they were former military. Many were former police officers. They all had their side gun, you know, their gun on their side holster.
Wait, are you saying that media outlets had armed security guards at the protests?
Oh, yeah. No, I have to say, I was like,
wow.
You know, and I have video of confronting them with some other people, because they were so rough in the crowd that I don't think at first people could distinguish, like, is this security, private security that the city has hired? Are these like some military men? No, this was the security for one CNN reporter, and they were agitating the crowd. They were pushing people in the crowd. And so, you know, just even that level of just how white men can just go around and do whatever, carry whatever gun for whatever purpose. If Mr. Scott had a gun, no one deserves to be executed the way he was, obviously. And it's an open carry state, but obviously laws do not pertain to Black people in any way, you know.
What about the death of Justin Carr? Justin Carr, apparently a protester last week, who was killed. Initially, people have, and I think a lot of people still believe and maintain, that it was from a stray bullet of a police officer. Now police have arrested another Black man and said that he's confessed to Justin Carr's killing. What did you learn while you were in Charlotte about what might have happened around Mr. Carr?
I spoke to a couple people that were next to him, near him in the grouping. So obviously there were that first couple nights, like the subsequent nights, there were a lot, thousands and thousands of people out in the streets. And I actually did an interview, and her name was Chanel Long, a lifelong resident of Charlotte, 28 years old. And she was marching right near Justin Carr, and the police shot rubber bullets and projectiles. And her point of view is that a projectile hit Mr. Scott, and he fell backwards and then cracked his head. So I was like, well, that's not correspond, was not what the police were saying, with what other witnesses have said. But all of them, all Chanel's story and some other witnesses' stories that I read, and I spoke to another young man that was in that same grouping, say that they think the police did it, or someone who was undercover in the crowd, acting like they were with the protest for the police. And again, you know, the response from some have been like, oh, you know, African-American black people always with a conspiracy. But, you know, they could arrest someone. We don't even know how, what kind of information they had to arrest him. But, you know, so there's a lot of, obviously a lot of people are having questions. And just the woman I interviewed, Chanel Long, was very obviously traumatized to see someone die. She said it in the interview I did with her. She said, I know people have died. I've never seen somebody basically die in front of me. Even though Justin didn't die right away, he was obvious, he was in such critical condition, and that the police weren't trying to even help him. And, you know, it took people in the crowd to carry him to the ambulance.
Rosa, you've been in places like Ferguson when that rebellion struck, and other places, I'm sure, as well, when people have been out in the streets demanding justice, and the sort of public anger just simmers up when, you know, over a whole bunch of issues, but usually one issue is sort of the spark that lights a fuse. How do you place Charlotte and what has happened in Charlotte within the broader context since the Ferguson uprising and since a greater public consciousness over this demand that Black lives need to matter?
I definitely place it within a context of rebellion, or a historical tradition of resistance and rebellion in the country, especially when it comes to issues around police, period. So police violence, brutality, all of it, prison industrial complex, anything to do with that overall, what is called the state. But, you know, I think one of the things that we have to grapple with in this movement work and as organizers or even those who are covering these is that where these rebellions are happening, that eventually it's the local, you know, the local people, the local leadership that will find a way to keep moving politically forward. And unfortunately, we'll probably have to deal with these situations if our statistics of every 28 hours or less stays true. And it doesn't seem like it's going to stop. It doesn't seem like particularly the police murders are going to stop, because there's literally no accountability for police, even when they kill. So if we even look at Tulsa, Oklahoma, yes, an officer was arrested. That does not mean that officer will be indicted or go to trial or be convicted. And if convicted, could get a sentence of 6 months, like the judge did in a case of Akai Gurley in New York City. I think the interesting thing about North Carolina, it's also a very regressive state, right? It's got a Republican governor, Tim Kaine, who runs the state house, is as right wing and racist as you can get. I mean, some of the things he was saying, just even on the talk shows on Sunday, was bad. And, you know, and that's the kind, and North Carolina's ground zero for trying to have one of the most restricted voting rights measures ever put in. So I think the people of Charlotte are dealing with this immediately. But in the larger part, I think that the state of North Carolina, in the way particularly some young people are organizing, are looking at things beyond and looking at things systemically, because they don't believe that the system is in any way going to get justice for Mr. Scott, and that these killings can continue to happen at the rate that they've been happening. And this is just the city of Charlotte, right? It's not even the state of North Carolina.
And then finally, Rosa, do you see these protests continuing? What is happening in Charlotte as far as you can tell today? I mentioned the curfew was lifted on Sunday. Will it simmer down or will it keep going for a few more days?
I think it's going to keep going in light of the fact that the Charlotte, the chief of police, still hasn't released all the tapes. I think it's going to keep going because there's organizers and other members of the community that are going to keep supporting Charlotte. And again, I think Charlotte may be a little different case in terms of the long-term work. And a lot of the organizing happening down south is some really cutting-edge organizing. What I really noticed in these protests, the 3 days I was there, was the amount of unity amongst Black, Brown, and South Asian young people. I mean, I've seen it in other places, but something is very different in what I saw in North Carolina. And I was talking to a young undocumented Mexicano, and he didn't want me to know his name or anything, which totally respect. He said that he feels the African-American community has been there for undocumented people. Now undocumented people have to be there for particularly this particular case. Walter Scott was African-American. And then the South Asian students said that their Muslim students are feeling the brunt of white nationalism in their communities. And I thought about the young brother and sister that were killed a couple years ago by a white vigilante in North Carolina. So I think North Carolina is very cutting edge right now in the way they're not just doing solidarity work, but kind of this really strong multi, or let me say, racialized working class movement that I see. And that was very exciting. Mm-hmm. It was super exciting. So the protests are going to keep going. They had protests yesterday and the police were brutal. People have been arrested. And if people want to know information or support in any way the work going down there, they can just hashtag Charlotte Uprising and get text alerts. And there's a protest today, and there was a protest in front of the Carolina Panthers game yesterday that was very powerful as well.
Rosa Comete, thank you so much for this report back. We always appreciate your analysis and insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Rosa Clemente is a community organizer active with Black Lives Matter, the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, and a freelance journalist. Currently, she's a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and she's a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get our daily emails with links to all our stories.